Hello, this is Dindria Barrow of the Community Archive Center, and I am here with.
Larry Duncan.
All right, it's so good to meet you, Larry. And
Nice to meet you.
we're going to start by talking about a neighborhood that Larry was a part of as a youngster, and the neighborhood was called Salishan. Tell us about Salishan, Larry.
Well, we were living in Fife, and then we secured a place at Salishan. And the first thing I remember was just neighborhood kids playing. One young man came up to me, and we befriended each other for a while. And for me, I was adopted and my parents were white. And I don't have any biological history. And this young man that I met was my first encounter with a African American friend. And so I didn't recognize what it was. I was just a kid, he was a kid, and that was it. And so it was, I think, believe it was summertime, and I met some other young men, and I was mobile. I had a bicycle, and so while my parents went to work, I usually stayed around the house and played in the neighborhood. And then when they got home, I got to venture up to this drive-in that I can't remember the name of it, but it was very popular. And they had these hand-size dipped ice cream bars called Dilly Bars. And they were round like a saucer, almost as big, it seemed to me, and dipped in chocolate. And they had a big, wide ice cream stick. And so that never loses your mind when you're a kid. And then, of course, after that was Piggly Wiggly, where, I would buy, milk for my mom or some small item I could carry home or candy. And then we school started, and I went to Lister Elementary, and that was my first big eye-opening social event. I had never been because I was adopted and my parents were white. They were not progressive in the least, and that times that I grew up, nobody was. And so going to a school where there was, I don't know, maybe 50% African Americans and 50% or the rest was Latinos and Caucasian. And so it was very different, the mannerisms and the differences and the way people were. But there again, as a kid, you don't think about it like that. It's only the afterthought that I thought about it. And but there was a lot of kids that would fight, and my friend that I had befriended, I guess, can I use the name?
Sure, why
Yeah,
not?
his name was Kenny Barry, and we're seven at the time, and this young man was had a reputation, and I'm sure he probably had a reputation with the local authorities, unfortunately for him. And kids at that age don't have any control. But Kenny and several other boys that would get in scraps, they could fight. And it the closest thing I can recollect is the Bugs Bunny Tasmanian devil that turns in a tornado coming onto your screen. This is how manly these young 7-year-old boys could fight, and fists are flying, but it was like boxers on the ground. I still remember it to this day. It took a grown man, male teacher, to separate them. And this was the bully problem that you had to watch out for, because it wasn't going to be easy. And I had to long walk through the woods to Lister and then back every day. And so I was on my P's and Q's for that kind of thing after that. But I never really had a big problem except for one incident. And so the teachers were not memorable at all. Some of the kids were. We had moved around a lot already at that point. And so it was rare for me to raise my hand or to feel comfortable in a situation. As soon as I did, we moved. I think I went to 10 different schools from kindergarten through fifth grade. And that was one of the stops after maybe three or four. And so, but it was seemed like an entire year that I went there. And, you know, we had the normal movies from time to time and homework and so on and so forth. But the interaction started to intensify with Kenny Barry and myself and my other friends who happened to be white had the same problem with him, with candy. Hey, you got some candy? Let me ask, how come you're not going to share candy? Because I had done that in the beginning. I shared my candy. That's what I did. And I think jealousy maybe set in. I'm not sure. And it got to the point to where I had to avoid him. And he would come around and hang out. And I couldn't get away. So my dad told me, well, if you got to defend yourself, you're going to have to defend yourself. And you need to just, maybe you might have to fight. But ball up your fist and hope for the best, and you know, whatever happens. And that's the way it was back then. And I was scared to death. Mm. And so one time we're on the steps, and my white friends and Kenny Barry, and you know, we're all just friends standing there, but he started talking about candy. And then I just had enough. And I said, well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. And that was enough for him to kind of approach me. And I backed up on the steps by their door. Nobody was home, and I didn't have anywhere else to go. And next thing I know, it's he and I swung and hit him, and I ran all the way home crying. And then later, everybody said, what'd you hit him for? And just said, I don't know. I just couldn't stand it. And he never bothered me after that. That was it. And he was so fast, even though I hit him and knocked him off the steps, he still barely got a scrape on my face because I could still feel that feeling, right? And but I never forgot it. And that was my stand up to a bully moment. And anyway, and so school continued, and we had lots of weekends where me and my friends were pretending to be landing on Mars and being chased by Amazon women, like all the movies back then were the B sci-fi movies, and are playing guns, cops and robbers, what have you. And then we'd see an occasional mom walk around looking for somebody with a police sap, which is like a knockout tool. And the police would come, and who was that? And I don't know, she had this big spoon in her hand. That's all we saw. And they knew what it was. And it had just happened to be Kenny Barry's mom. And so he had definitely a big dysfunctional family. And I think his dad was even worse. And so, but that was as close as I ever got to that situation. But then there was the kite man. And this is difficult to talk about, because even though I have no idea who this man is, I only know that my parents said, well, you know, he's in the military and he's our neighbor, and he's asking if you want to go and fly kites. And I said, yeah, sure. And so we went, and he made homemade kites. And they were out of like drugstore type of bag paper. And they were amazing. And my mom made a tail and gave it to him because she could sew. And so we'd fly kites in an open playground somewhere and spend maybe an hour or so doing that. And he'd chit chat, but I don't really remember other than the kite process. And then we did it another time or two. And then I brought a kite that my stepdad bought for me. And he got mad. The guy didn't like that. I think he immediately felt jealous. And I never understood it, but I just told my parents, well, I don't think I want to go anymore because, you know, he got a little, you know, upset. Not openly, but just I could tell, you know. And so that was the last time I saw him. And then we, next thing I know, there's a trailer that we're loading up and we're moving to Portland, Oregon. And so we moved to Portland, go there a year, third grade. My parents separate. We moved to Columbus, Georgia, because my brother joined the military early. I went to fourth and most of fifth grade there. Moved across the river to Phoenix City, Alabama. Finished up most of fifth grade, a couple months. And then we moved back to Wenatchee, Washington. And that's where we had lived before I lived in Tacoma, with a few cities in between. And so it's summertime, I'm playing, finishing up the last 5 weeks of sixth grade. I meet my new friends. I do the Apple Blossom Parade. The kids in the class help me make a float that I need for my bike. And about, you know, 6 weeks had gone by since we came back from the South. And I'm coming home, and here comes the kite man walking down the steps from my house. And I don't think to say, well, hi, what are you doing here? Why are you here, right? So we're 150 miles away from where we were almost 4 years before I met him. And to my knowledge, we didn't have any contact with him. I never heard his name or anything about him mentioned. And he goes, you remember me? And I go, yeah. And he was in his GI uniform. And now that I think, when I see my picture as a young man, and I see what I remember of him, I think, you know, was he my dad? Was he trying to say, you know, I want to spend some time, I want to reconnect? And I never knew. And of course, my mom never volunteered any information. For her, it was, forget about your past. Your dad died in the Korean War, that was it. So, and I don't remember his last name. It was Portuguese or something, right? And that was always a mystery for me. She never really fessed up. And so that is always a serious mystery for me about Salishan, that whirlwind social event that was a big eye-opener for a African-American white kid, really, because I didn't know my true identity and my heritage was masked by my mom's fear that I would not identify. And for her, she was 40 when she adopted me. She had to lie and say she was 39. And so she was kind of like a grandma and a mom at the same time. So her generation, African-American people, you know, from what she remembered, as brave as she was to adopt me, and also my brother, who was Native Alaskan Indian and half Caucasian from Alaska before I was adopted. She was pretty brave and pretty, you know, maverick in those days, but to try to give me some identity that would be other than what she thought would be hated was, I guess, her thought. I never will know. She's gone now, and so is my stepdad. And my brother is also passed. So anyway, this is connected to a kind of feudal connection to contacting the housing authority to get the unit that we lived, maybe I can cross-reference the name of that GI. Maybe there's some way that I can skip trace. I used to work in collections. And so I still know how to trace people. And so maybe I can find some connection, some long lost relative, who knows? And so I thought, well, why not? You know, maybe this is the beginning of me turning a new chapter. I want to leave this for my son, because I don't have anything to give him. He and I are blood. I don't have any blood relatives. And so if I could do that for him, that would be, you know, a gift. So, but his relatives, my wife is from Japan, and all his relatives are there. He's fluent in Japanese, and he's got quite the mixture of melting pot of stories about his heritage and background and so on and so forth. So anyway, that's kind of it in a nutshell. Other than the occasional conflicts with other kids from other parts of Salishan that ended up in the middle finger throwing and the screaming and the yelling and then running home before the parents found out what happened, kind of thing. That's kind of my memory of that neighborhood.
Excellent. So you answered all of my questions, because I was going to ask you what Salishan meant to you, and you answered that question. And then you shared a story that was pertinent to that place. And so hopefully we can help you with finding more information and connections through the Northwest Room. And this story is going to be preserved for your son.
Okay.
Okay. It's going to be online on the database. Do you want to share one more question? I've got another question I want to throw at you.
Hey, I'm good at answering questions.
All right. What are your dreams?
Well, I'm 68. So, and I've lived a pretty storied life. That starts out in a question mark. And I was adopted legally from the time I was 3 days old. So I know who my biological mom was, even though I never saw her. So that's a big mystery, moving around North America with a white family and a native Alaskan brother, and all the different places that I've lived and all the different things I've seen. And then, of course, being African American, I have that experience, and it's stamped with the experiences that I experienced in Columbus, Georgia, and Phenix City, Alabama. How I survived that in the neighborhoods that I lived, and the places I got thrown out of, and I still went to an all-white school, and that's a story in itself, in Alabama and Georgia, and in a plantation-like setting with all African-American help and janitor, and me, and I know they were looking at me thinking, oh my God, how did he get here? And so, but you know, the extra food I got on my plate that was like home cooking, I never thought about it except for yummy. And at this point, beyond the other time that I danced across the other side of the tracks with someone that I met during the wild 70s, away from the college and football path that I was starting to take and down a rabbit hole that was not something I'm proud of, but it took me in an avenue that I was lucky to survive. And I squared up, so to speak, and woke up. And myself and that friend of 50 years are still friends, and he did the same. He changed his lifestyle. And I just want to live out my life being the best father that I can be and husband. And I've been fortunate to have a very different life that's a book. And, you know, my son is our major focus right now. And that's the lottery. So it's not, you know, on the identity scenario, I didn't grow up identifying as an African American. I had to find that out after my mom was gone and do a DNA test. And I found out what was obvious, but still always a puzzle, that I'm 51% sub-Saharan African and 49% Caucasian. And that kind of put a stamp on, you know, what I knew, not the whole time, but I started understanding it. I had some friends from New Orleans that somehow, another book chapter, ended up from New Orleans in the Ninth Ward to Wenatchee, Washington. And one gentleman, they all three graduated with masters, and they were all smart. It was the 60s, Black Panther, all that kind of stuff time. And one took me under his wing and told me all about my experience at home and about my parents and what they were telling me without even knowing. And I thought, how does he know that? And so I started realizing that, you know, something's amiss here and I need to find out. And so little by little, I went more and more to African-American communities and started to discover a way about myself. But unfortunately, it was the wrong way. And then now over the years, little by little, I've learned to come to grips with everything, and that I may not be, quote unquote, African-American from a sociological standpoint. I still have things that I learned in the white community, but I recognize who I am and the things I went through. I am African-American, and I have to, you know, pay homage to my heritage as much as is possible without seeming fake. And that's important for me to pass that to my son, which I think he comes to grip with. And my crazy friend that I've known for 50 years, who lives in Atlanta, he's in a nursing home now. He's come by here several times and taught my son dominoes, and we've watched Super Bowl games. And he's a character in and of itself. And players from the 60s, hustlers, come up in the Haight-Ashbury time. That was my friend, born in Texas in L.A. And he could sell fried ice cream to an Eskimo, to quote a politically incorrect statement. And as church mouse as I could get him to be, he would come to dinner, and my son soaked up a lot of, oh my God, that's your friend, Dad. And to this day, he still sheds a tear when I say, well, he might not be around very much. So as much of an influence as I could give my son from my friends, my African-American friends, and the experiences that I have that are good, I've shared that with him. And now he's a National Honor Society and great soccer player and going to college, and I give him as much as I can. We fight like hell, but we've survived. My wife and I survive. That's it.
All right. Oh,
went out the lottery.
Yeah. I thank you so much for sharing your story, and identity is such a big part of our lives, and so all of us could be writing books about that, you know.
Yes.
And especially your son is going to be able to really try to navigate and figure out and put the puzzle pieces together for himself. So I am going to stop pressing record and say thank you so much, but
You're
we'll
welcome.
stay on for just a minute.
Okay.